This is the nonprofit news feed, of course, brought to you by Whole Whale. My name is George Weiner, the chief whaler of Whole Whale, and Nick Azoulay, who is a digital strategist at Whole Whale, a B Corp digital agency. And this week we are talking about satellites. We're talking about Texas subpoenas and elections, but also a little very hyper local news. I'm a little excited that the Whole Whale YouTube account is about to hit 10,000 subscribers, which I know is a vanity metric, although I will say we get a special email. I learned a special email from YouTube congratulating us, and I also think it may help us in the general lift of our videos. So maybe you could be the 10,000th subscriber, but it's going to happen probably in this week.
Very exciting. George, maybe we'll be able to celebrate our 10,000th subscriber with some champagne in person next week, which is very exciting. But
oh, the Whole Whale staff retreat. That's right.
Whole Whale staff retreat. I'm excited for that
too. Yeah, we may be off next week. Great.
All right. I'll kick us off with our first story. And this one is a really cool one, George. I know both you and I are excited for it. And that is that the first ever nonprofit-backed satellite has been launched into space to collect data on methane, which is a critical component of what causes climate change. So the Environmental Defense Fund's MethaneSat became the first nonprofit satellite to be launched into space last week, as reported in many outlets. Now, the satellite made its journey aboard a SpaceX rocket, how most things end up in space these days, and will provide, quote, free, accurate, high-resolution quantification of total emissions to the public to enable both countries and companies to identify, manage, and reduce their emissions, and allow investors, gas buyers, and the public to see and compare results. This is one of the most comprehensive efforts to map methane production across the globe. The satellite will provide key insights that were previously unavailable, particularly in regions that were under in their release of methane. And the project is designed to focus exclusively on methane. And they hope, because it's the Environmental Defense Fund, that the data will enable climate scientists, advocacy groups, media, and the public to then go on to hold governments, policymakers, and industries accountable. George, congratulations to the nonprofit sector on our first nonprofit satellite. This is so freaking cool.
We did it! Satellites in space to track cow farts, right? This is a cow fart tracker, right? That's where all this methane comes from. I was actually looking it up, though. Even though it's a misnomer that cow farts, it's cow burping, actually, that leads to the disproportionate amount of livestock methane out there. And it roughly attributes 4% of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions, according to the EPA, for cattle and other types of livestock animals. But I think getting back to this, methane is important for tracking. If you're wondering, like, I thought it was all CO2, like, I think they're just very focused on methane in particular because it is so much more effective in the bad way at trapping heat in the atmosphere. And so by showing this view of the impacts and sources of methane, you know, the step one is, you know, you can't manage what you can't measure. And this is a great example of pulling together the resources to show the industry what's going on so that we can then make those types of changes focused on in and around methane.
Yeah, George, it's really cool. And I love the thinking behind this. The idea is that a NASA satellite that goes up is measuring, you know, 15 different things. It's doing all these complicated surveys. This is one satellite for one job, which really hones both the data and the story the data is trying to tell, which if you're the Environmental Defense Fund, you're trying to tell that story that, hey, we need to do something about this. And some additional facts about methane, for those who don't know, methane is a chemical compound consisting of one carbon atom and four hydrogen atoms. It's colorless, odorless, and flammable, and it's the main component of natural gas. It's when you see those natural gas refineries, the little thing that's going up in flames, that is methane burning into the atmosphere. The primary sources of methane include agriculture, as you talked about, livestock farming, rice cultivation, fossil fuel production, landfills and waste management, as well as biomass burning. Why is it damaging to the climate? As you mentioned, it's really, really good at trapping heat, in fact, more efficiently than CO2. And for that reason, methane is responsible for about 20% of the global warming caused by human activity. activities. Mm. So reducing it is, in some ways, according to the Environmental Defense Fund, one of our best shots about reining in climate change and hitting our global targets. So really, really cool work. Read more about this in Nonprofit Newsfeed, the newsletter, but great to see science and science advocacy and space and data coming together to hopefully create real impact down the road.
I know it's going to happen when we post this to YouTube and get the inevitable comments that, like, we're talking about man-made sources of greenhouse gases. And they're like, no way, it's all nature. We're like, frankly, we wouldn't have that amount of methane being pushed out into the world if not for these particular human activities. I'm going to put it another way. If you were trapped in a garage and you had a bunch of methane being created by, let's say, a cow inside of it, and you had to live inside that garage, you would eventually die because you would run out of the types of atmospheric necessities that humans need. Now, just imagine instead of the word garage, I'd said Earth. There's a finite amount of space on Earth, in our atmosphere, and we are putting gases in it that would kill us if we were locked in a garage with them. I just have a hard time getting my head around folks that don't acknowledge that humans play a role in this. But let the YouTube comments flow.
Absolutely. And George, important to note, humans famously have only been able to live on one such planet. So let's hope we take care of the one we got. All right, I can take us into our next story. And this one is an interesting one, comes from Forbes, and that is that nonprofits are bracing for, but also unprepared for, the 2024 election, which of course is coming up this November. So the new report is sounding alarms that many nonprofits might be caught off guard when the election comes. While, of course, they're providing services, 82% of nonprofit leaders are quite nervous about their communication name, knowing that the political climate makes fundraising really, really hard, breaking through all that political noise and political spending, particularly if you're engaged in any kind of advertising. But 70% say that they see, quote, a silver lining and are ready to kind of hop on to the coattails of the political activism that we know is coming and hopefully catch fundraising that way. But George, I think it's hard to overstate the volume of money and grasps at attention that are going to be made, I think, beginning at the end of the summer into September, October, November. It is going to be all election all the time. And nonprofits do need to prepare for being able to continue to communicate with their key stakeholders during that time.
Being very aware of whether or not your message is going to be resonant or adjacent to the narratives going on matters quite a bit on whether or not you're going to get any slice of that attention. It will put incredible wind behind a very few number of sales. If you are out of that, sticking with this metaphor, little wind channel, you are dead in the water. You're just going to overpay for those types of, let's just say, Facebook or search type of ads that are in the maelstrom of spending associated with the political cycle. So, you know, maybe sit it out if your message isn't resonant or adjacent there. Save your money for when those market economies come back and the attention market is more favorable to your spending. Pay attention to those costs and maybe, you know, adjust as needed, because each and every 4 years, there's an unprecedented amount of fill in the blank that happens. So pay attention.
For sure. This is something I'm sure we'll be talking more about. And it'll be interesting to see some of that.
We'll keep bringing this up.
We haven't really talked about it, but it's coming. Speaking of politics, this comes from the Texas Tribune. An El Paso judge has blocked Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton's efforts to subpoena the nonprofit Annunciation House. Annunciation House is a nonprofit organization that provides shelter and resources to migrants. It's, you know, there's a ton of kind of humanitarian work that's needed in Texas and other places and getting help to these migrants. But a judge has blocked Paxton's subpoena of Annunciation House, essentially claiming that Paxton was using subpoenas and legal pressure as a form of political intimidation for the nonprofit. This was blocked by Judge Ryan Bosch, an assistant attorney general's efforts, and the judge kind of told him off. So By the way, Ken Paxton, not a good guy, almost universally not seen as a good guy. That's outside the purview of this article. Guy shouldn't be in office anyway. But George, this is, I think, an important thing because all across the country, right, you are seeing the issue of migrants and immigrants coming to the forefront. It was a topic during the State of the Union and is an issue that's at the top of the political discourse. But I think you're seeing nonprofits getting caught in that. It's important to remember that while these politicians are demagoguing the issue of migrants and immigration, which is a real issue, but still demagoguing it for political purposes, it's nonprofits, NGOs that are really the ones that are at the forefront of providing shelter and all the basic human necessities to these migrants. And it's unfortunate they're getting caught within the political fray.
I think there's going to be a lot of performative politic around immigration as we move into this election cycle. Nonprofits, unfortunately, that are on those front lines helping the issue will probably be targeted so that, you know, these representatives can say, hey, look, I'm fighting the fight. Look what I'm doing. And that is represented by firing off, you know, unjustified subpoenas that get shut down in court the second that they see the light of day, which is an unfortunate amount of additional paperwork for nonprofits, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, administrative attacks were the exact same tactic used by Viktor Orban to essentially silence civil society in Hungary, just using the administrative state to keep on beating these organizations until they couldn't keep up with it any longer. A story for another day. But George, I think we need a feel good. And this one comes from WDIV. Click on Detroit. All right. And it's about a nonprofit seeking to wipe out $700 million in medical debt in Wayne County, courtesy of partnership with RIP Medical Debt, an organization that we love here at the podcast. And essentially, you know, they buy up medical debt and can wipe it out with extreme amounts of efficiency. So, George, just celebrating $700 million in less medical debt that hardworking Americans don't need to worry about, which is tremendous news.
It's awesome. We covered how RIP Medical Debt was working with, you know, New York and reducing New Yorkers' medical debt bills. And what a brilliant way to partner with municipalities to do this for a local population. Again, because you can't pay a medical bill, that one simple thing is the number one reason of needing to declare bankruptcy. What I can't imagine a better way of helping a local population than partnering with RIP Medical Debt. Like 10x is the impact. They're buying up these debt obligations for pennies on the dollar and allowing it to just be forgiven. And it is something that we keep watching them roll out across the country, and a great way of partnering even as a strategy from a regional standpoint. This is how this helps your population. Here's the value add. Here's what a partnership looks like. And dollars to dollars, it's effectively deployed. Bravo, bravo, bravo.
Absolutely.
All right, Nick, I have a joke for you because that's what we do here.
I love it.
Okay, but the question is, how did the National Audubon Society build their newest nature center?
Oh, George, I don't know.
A crane.
Oh, I see. I see. A crane. A crane. I see what you did there.
Yep. Nope. Very creative. That's what happens when dad jokes meet nonprofits. Nick, thanks for giving us the news. See you out there.
Thanks, George.